Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Motis, and I'm your host, a Filipina-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration, to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to our sponsors, TrueLearn and PicMonic. PicMonic is an excellent learning resource and study aid for occupational therapy and occupational therapy assistant students, whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam. PicMonic is the only visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams through the use of audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. How I wish I had a learning tool like this back when I was in OT school. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes or code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your PicMonic membership. Happy studying! So today, I'm super excited to introduce you to our guest of honor. We are joined by Bill Wong. Bill is an uncommon occupational therapist who speaks in and produces TED Talks. He has been an occupational therapist for 10 years, working primarily in skilled nursing facilities. He is also an adjunct instructor and thesis advisor for Stanbridge University's MSOT program. Bill is an active member of AOTA, serving in the Representative Assembly in 2017 to 2020, and is part of the Volunteer Leadership Development Committee in 2020 to 2022. He is currently the co-facilitator for the Autism Community of Practice Group, and Bill is also an OT conference junkie, as he has attended 50 OT conferences inside and outside of the United States thus far in his career. Finally, aside from having 3 TED Talks under his name as a speaker, Bill has been an active TEDx event licensee since 2018. He has produced 23 TEDx Talks as of this recording and is planning to produce more in the coming years. So here to tell us more about his uncommon OT work, without further ado, I'd like to present to you Bill Wong. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you for having me. And this time we nailed it.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to have you on the show. And thank you so much for taking the time to be here to share your OT experiences with us, particularly your experiences in speaking and producing TED Talks. But before we delve into all of that good stuff, I would love to start by having you tell us a little bit about you, a little bit about your background.
Sure. I think the intro also summarized a little bit already. So before OT, I was actually a stats major. And I was unemployed for a year, year and a half before actually my parents actually led me to think about OT. But at that time, OT was considered as my third choice. I say that because, well, at first we considered business school, because we had the least amount of prereqs to make up. But then we took the graduate school exam for business school, and we felt that, you know what, that's not, the results was not indicated that I can go to a good school. So I was like, okay, forget that, you know? And then we thought about a seminary, because at that time we knew some children of clergy, aka preacher's kids at that time. But then we also looked at the job prospects, and we felt that, you know what, that may not be a good return on investment.
Okay.
So therefore, OT at that time was a third choice. So how we came into OT was a little bit a weird story, I guess I'll say. For me, I didn't go the traditional route. I was like, oh, I have a loved one at the hospital. or I received OT in the past. For me, it was through my mom. But my mom at the time, she worked in the school system, and she works at like the front desk administrative kind of job. So there were people that would check visitors in at the school office before they're allowed to enter the premises of the elementary school. And so, of course, when my mom found that the school-based occupational therapist who came by the school. So at that time, she also knew that I was unemployed. So therefore, it's like, hey, you know what? She took the opportunity to ask the school-based occupational therapist some questions about OT. Mm-hmm. And based on whatever she could understand, he's trying to convince me. He's like, hey, this could be a field that you should go into because of the fact that, hey, a solid job, decent pay, and if you go smoothly, unemployment rate should be relatively low, you know. So, but at that time, I'm not finished yet with that story though.
Okay.
At that time, even though my mom relayed those kind of information, we still didn't know too much about OT. So we tried to go to the new students orientation. I think I went to the one at USC at the Health Science Campus. It was a 2-hour orientation, but at that time, neither my parents nor I, we had a very wide driving radius. So we actually tried to get to the Health Science Campus of USC by public transit, but we got lost. So we end up coming to the orientation 1 hour late. So it was 2-hour orientation, we were 1 hour late.
Oh dear, that must have been some commute.
Well, I mean, like, the commute wasn't too bad, but at that time we were not very familiar with downtown LA. We're not very familiar, neck of the woods. So we did not know where the Health Science Campus was until an hour into the orientation. Oh, I guess, fortunately, in OT's favor, the part that I heard, I think that maybe something that people might not like to hear. Mm-hmm. I think the part that I heard during the orientation was like, oh, OT, we need more research scientists. We need more researchers. And then at that time, like, hey, my mom sort of thought, I guess because at that time, we did not know too much about OT. We were pretty naive. I was like, hey, you know what? Maybe research is my niche in OT. That was at that time, because at that time, I think it's a very logical thinking. At that time, it was because my background is in stats. And I had some inherent knowledge about research. I should have given my undergrad degree. So I was like, hey, at that time, I think it's like my parents felt that the field would fit me like a glove.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely want to hear more about what led you from kind of that younger Bill Wong in, you know, thinking about OT school and research kind of being the allure, right? And then now to the Bill Wong of today, who's doing what you're doing, right? So there's quite a lot there to fill in.
It is quite a lot, right? Although, of course, I think the research part, I think I fulfilled a little bit, you know? So it's not completely untrue.
Yes.
It's not completely untrue, but I think what happened after, definitely that was a very interesting journey.
Oh, wow. And I love how your mom and your parents were such a big support for you. And it sounds like they were really, you know, instrumental in helping you kind of make some decisions related to, you know, where you ended up being very happy in.
Well, at that time, I think it's like we were in a crossroads. So it's like, I mean, like, if you're a parent, right? It's like, if you see a kid that's like, okay, it's a year and a half unemployed, what will you do? It's like, hey, get off the couch and do something, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. So I think that was like my mom giving me a kick in the butt kind of moment.
Well, it worked.
Ironically enough, I'm also a side plug before we dive into today's story.
Oh, okay.
So we have a family friend. He was probably he's a couple of years younger than me. We actually is like, after I got in the field, you know, for a bit, and then my family and his family noticed a similar predicament that he's going through. So it's like, you know what? It's like my parents and his parents sort of gave him a kick in the butt. It's like, hey, you got to do something.
Okay.
Now he's an OT too.
Look at that. So, yeah, your parents were onto something there. They knew exactly what to say to light that fire. And, you know, I say that jokingly, but, you know, again, I think that they were such great motivators for you, right? Encouraging you to really explore, you know, variety of paths and even like finding something in your mom's workplace that she felt was like, you know what? I think this is a good match for Bill. And, then introducing you to, you know, this industry and we are richer because, you're a part of it. Right. So let's take a step back and ask you, just want to ask you, like, what motivated you to contribute to this podcast series? I know your time is very precious. You can be talking. You talk all the time. In fact, you were sharing with me. You were just speaking at a conference before this recording. So having you come in, and I know you love to talk about, you know, your work. But yeah, what motivated you to contribute?
I think, you know what? Sometimes it's like, I know. I think it's really related to this topic, actually. Because of the fact that a lot of OT practitioners and students, they really associate with TEDx talk with just speaking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they really understand the other nitty gritty or the nuts and bolts behind a TEDx event, as well as possibilities on how to use it to promote the profession. And ironically enough, like earlier today, actually, the presentation before mine was, it was about, how OT should partners in the community. So I was typing in the Zoom chat that during that session, I said, hey, this is my involvement in TEDx. And why is OT not studying what I'm studying? You know, and then I sort of made a comment to these people presenters, like, hey, you know, some of the stuff you guys do can be recycled or repurposed for the TEDx events.
Yes, and absolutely.
I think that people in the general public can find it very cool, you know? So that was sort of like, yeah, that was, I think it was like, the fact that I attended the conference today sort of gave me an extra sentence or two on what the answer is.
Yes. Well, I love that we're hitting that nail, right? Like, this is an area that you feel that OTs should be, really be a platform that OTs should be on, right? Because it would allow for us to reach a wider community.
Oh, yeah. Because I remember that conference presentation before mine today, it was talking about partnerships in the community. And I think there was a capstone student talking about like, oh, the networking opportunities to actually network with people beyond OT, beyond whatever field that they were in. So, and then I'm thinking about some of the things in our history, right? We talk a lot about how creative we are.
Yes.
As a profession. So I was like, hey, you know, it's like, maybe the work is a little hard, but it's like we have the components to actually make it happen. I think, and then I would say it's more like, I would say there are some people on the internet too that talk about like, some people say it's like, aren't we doing this? Look at how many OTs sticking on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that was a lot of people saying that to me. Of course, I was like, yeah, I know that.
Yes.
But
at OT conferences.
I
right
know.
To OT
or even social media too.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about it, but I was like, you know, I think I used this analogy at the World Federation Conference when I explained my poster. I said, well, if you are speaking at a TEDx event, essentially you are along for the ride in the car. You're a team member. You're like a co-pilot.
Okay.
If you have the license, like I do, then it's like, hey, I'm driving the car.
Yes.
So therefore, it is a very different level than what people associate with.
Got it. So let's segue into that. Let's talk about the uncommon OT work that you do. You can take it in any direction. I know you do quite a few different things. I know our main topic is going to be on, you know, your speaking in and your production of the TED Talks. So you can take it away.
So I guess maybe I'm going to talk about like how I got involved in TEDx, I guess.
Ah.
So okay. I think that is a good question that people would ask. I know. I think it's like when I was in OT school, ironically enough, I think there were some classes where they show some TED Talks already. I think TEDx was not really taken off yet. Although I have to give a side plug though, is that I don't think many people in OT knows this, but aside from USC, I'm talking about University of Southern California. Since there could be some global audience out there. So
yes.
The implementation of USC is University of Southern California. I think some people say it's like, oh, that's the birthplace of lifestyle redesign and that kind of stuff in OT. I think people know more about that, about USC. What people don't know about USC is that it is also the birthplace of TEDx. And from a historical standpoint, actually, ironically enough, the first TEDx event, it was at USC 3 months before I started OT school, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a side fact that I don't think many OT historians would know. Yeah,
well, so that's something
that is a very interesting tidbit that I don't think people would know. So it's like, well, now people know about what USC is known for on top of the OT stuff now. Yeah.
How nice that your expertise is in both, right?
Right. And that is like, I think it's like, so what got me interested at the time, I think it was like, I was first introduced to TED because I think I watched some videos during my second year of OT school, if I'm correct. I think it was from the big TED, not the TEDx events per se, but I will say, yeah, that was my first introduction to TED. But at that time, I guess it's like not many people. I did not know what TED was. I didn't know what that stands for. I did not know in terms of what the talks are all about, that kind of stuff. So I'd say, I heard the name, you know, it's like the name, but I don't know what it is in particular. And then in 2014, I would say, that will be late 2014. So one thing happened was actually my early dance partner at OTA conferences, Carly Rogers, she gave a TED talk at TEDx UCLA, back in May of that year. So she talked on Facebook about her experiences on that stage. And then in October, I think at that time there was a student who was on the planning team in a TEDx event where I did my first TEDx talk in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
He found me out through Twitter, I believe. Yeah, and she followed me along and read about my stories. And she approached me and said, hey, Bill, I'm on a planning team of a TEDx event here in North Dakota right now. I'm a student. I've been following you on Twitter. I've been knowing about your perspective, what your viewpoints are. And you know what? I felt that you could be a good fit to speak at a TEDx event in North Dakota in the winter months of 2015. It was like, would you be interested to come? And then so
this an OT student, Bill? Or
it was an
this...
OT student, correct.
Okay.
It was an OT student, that's correct.
Okay.
So at that time, of course, I mentioned about like, I know the brand, but I did not know what TEDx was all about. I mean, I read a little bit through Carly's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know too much about like what the experience really entailed for speakers.
Yes.
Because I also had not attended a TEDx event before until that point. So we chatted for an hour and a half about what the experience would be like, what my responsibilities could be, you know. So I said at the end of the chat, I just said, hey, nominate me. We'll see how it goes. And then 3 weeks later, I did get an interview from the team.
Okay.
And then that evening, they notified that I got in as a speaker.
Awesome.
So I think that it took, I would say the next morning, it took my parents like 15, 20 minutes to sink in to realize what that meant. But then, of course, the first person I contact in OT about that news was Carly. So I had her phone number. So I text her and say, hey, you know, believe it or not, I got in to this TEDx. Can you tell me what it is going to be about? Yeah. Can you tell me more about like what to expect? You know, like, hey, for me, I want to be as prepared as possible. You know, I heard at the interview, I heard about live stream. I heard about being recorded. I was like, okay, this is definitely tougher than what I've done before in terms of speaking wise. So like, what I want to know is I want to know firsthand from someone I know and trust about what her recent experience was. Even though I know it's a different event, but at least I know, like, at least I have some sort of idea, right?
Yeah. Well, I just love the, I don't know, you're just so open to that experience. You know, you're so open to this, to that new challenge. And whatever you were going to be faced with, you were going to kind of approach that positively and enthusiastically. So I think that's definitely part of the formula of why, you know, it became a really successful experience for you.
I think what I've learned from the other AOTA keynotes I've heard in the past, I think one of the common themes I've heard from leaders is like, hey, you know what? I mean, if the opportunity fits you or is constructive to you, you should say yes.
Yes.
I think the consensus I've heard from other leaders, from a traditional sense, of course. I know we talk about uncommon OT. Hey, this applies here, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, being in an uncommon OT, there's certainly a lot of uncomfortable situations. But, you know, OT or not, I think that's kind of where growth happens too, right? When there's, you kind of get a little bit beyond that discomfort, and that's where... Yeah, that's where there's room for growth. So,
of course. And then, of course, and a side note is like, I come into the winter in North Dakota. Since I'm a warm weather baby, I would say prior to that point, I think it's like the coldest I ever experienced was 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yes.
So to go to a place that is like negative 10, that was quite a shock to me as well. So aside from the mental adjustment, there's also the physical adjustment.
Wow, that is hilarious.
That is hilarious. I'm like, yeah, that was the first time, ironically, that's the first time I see snow. So that was the first time. So that was like, yeah. So aside from a mental challenge, it was also a physical challenge. Just like, yeah, that's why the joke at the interview was, can you handle the cold?
That was part of the criteria. What was your topic of your first TED Talk?
I believe it was about how autistic individuals overcoming their problems.
Okay.
That's my one sentence summary, but I just forgot the title already. It's so long ago.
Maybe we can attach that as part of our show notes.
I remember I showed up to that event the day before, so I really got to experience a North Dakota winter. And we got negative 10 degrees. That was probably the coldest I've ever experienced. For sure. Yeah. But nonetheless, I mean, I got to see the stage for the first time. And that stage was pretty memorable. They actually rented a drone from University of North Dakota as part of the stage. So the drone always sticks with me when I talk about my first TEDx experience.
Wow. So I've seen TED Talks, listened to them. It's, you know, you usually just see the speaker, not the audience so much, or sometimes the kind of pan. So did you have a large audience there, or was it just being recorded?
So I guess it's like, we can talk about a little bit later about pre-COVID and post-COVID, because sometimes too, because that was pre-COVID, obviously. 2015 was obviously pre-COVID. So I would say the behind the scenes stuff. So I would say I would spend a day to, part of it was to soak in that environment, what I'll be in for. So of course, getting my sea legs, right? So to actually get used to be on that stage, to actually present at that kind of an audience, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know, like, before that point, I mean, I've done some podcasts, but never before I really spoke in front of a non-OT audience live. On top of the fact that it's live streamed, that was definitely an adventure itself. So I'm glad that the team had really, like, making sure that we were adequately prepared. But prepared is that, okay, the day before I arrived, we actually got to do a walkthrough.
Okay.
And in the morning of, we got another walkthrough.
Okay.
So that was set. And then it's like the location was actually very cool too. I know with every TEDx, the location is very different, but the location is at a theater. I think it's like a musical theater. Oh. So, the speakers, they actually get to watch. So they have two stories too. So the general audience, they would be on the bottom level.
Mm-hmm.
And so, speakers will be watching from the bird's eye seat from the top level.
Yes.
So we are actually watching stuff at the top level as the events go, what's going on. But of course, and then we know our turn's coming up, like about two speakers before, and I was like, okay, we need to get down to the basement and get ready to get mic'd up and that kind of stuff. Because I know that many people see TEDx Talks in its individual pieces on YouTube. But during the event, there's actually an arts and crafts to it. So there's actually an art in terms of sequencing these kind of speakers. So I remember during that 5-hour event, I think I was the third speaker in the second session. So I really had to wait about 4 hours before my turn.
Oh my gosh, that in itself could be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah,
all the waiting.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, like, people just watch the TEDx Talks on YouTube. They don't see that kind of things.
Mm-hmm. It's all edited by the time we see it.
And then it's like, you don't see the nerves. You don't see what people feel behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, yeah. So that was what that was like. I waited 4 hours.
Wow.
Partly was because of the sequence. Partly was because on that day, they actually also had to play catch up. What I mean by that is, like, the live stream was actually not working for an hour.
Okay. So that's not typical, right? That's not typical.
That is not typical.
Okay.
So therefore, the whole event start got delayed by an hour because of it. Yeah.
How about your other TED Talks? Were they also the same way where you had to wait a bit or those were?
No, actually it's very different. Okay. So my next experience, I guess we have to fast forward a little bit now. Okay, let me backtrack a little bit also, because I would say after the experience, I never thought that I would do a second one because people from other TEDx team, they said, oh, we heard about your story. We want to have you. But I'm like, you know what? It's like, we don't want to promote what they called. I guess I can explain the term circus speaking. So in OT world, of course, the more conferences you present, the better. That is good on your CV, right? But on the TEDx space, it's not that way. It's like these kind of opportunities are very sacred. And I remember that there were people from other teams. They actually were in the audience. They watched my talk live as part of the audience. They realized like, hey, damn it, we want to have you too, but... I guess it's like, you know what? We need to respect the spirit of the rules. But of course, at that time, I did not know about this, what they mean by the spirit of the rules, you know?
Yes.
So it's like, you know what? It's like, we're great that you got a chance, you know? So based on that comment, I was like, maybe that's one and done.
Thanks for telling us how you got into your TED Talks and even describing for us your very first experience with it. It sounds like it was super nerve-wracking, but at the same time, obviously also something that stuck with you, right? It also sounds like there's quite a process here. And I want to kind of give our listeners an idea of what that process might look like. You mentioned an interview of screening. Can you talk a little bit about that or that beginning process? How does one apply?
So I guess it depends because each organizer, they vary. It's like in the practice, right? So
yeah. We
have different approaches, different preferences. So some people, some of the events, they may have a website that can fill out a form that you can openly apply. Just like call for papers for OT conferences, right? So that kind of deal. So you may be required to submit a bio. And then, of course, a little bit about yourself. You might be either required to submit a short written description of what your proposed talk is about or a video. So that could be one way. I'm trying to be short and sweet here. second way sometimes is like, I know I've used this since last year, is that sometimes I guess it's like the, I use my OT sense, you know, I like over people. So therefore sometimes it's like, okay, you know what? Maybe so like, I don't want to say stalking people, but I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe this person has something that is valuable to speak on the TEDx platform. So I was like, you know what? Let me just get a build a rapport with them. Let me try to see, but sort of like as an OT, trying to think is like, hey, would I be compatible to work with this person?
Yeah.
So I guess it's like, if I feel I do, and it's a good match with topic, then I might, just like a wedding proposal, right? Like, hey, will you be my partner? In this case, of course, I'm like, hey, would you want to be on my TEDx event? Yes. And of course, I will explain a little bit like, okay, what I'm looking for and what, just like what you do with me, right? Like,
yeah.
I think you're a good fit, that kind of thing. So there's that kind of thing. Sometimes that's some way that has happened before.
Okay.
The third way I also have seen before, and I have gotten some speakers this way. Actually, I would say I got some cold direct messages on my social media accounts. We talk about Facebook pages, LinkedIn, or even Twitter sometimes.
Okay.
So
they'll just message you and ask you if they can be a part of one of your TED Talks because they specialize in something.
Or they just found my info through TED.com because I put my social information on there. So they probably just cold direct message me. And then sometimes I'll say no because like, you know what? This idea I already heard a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm intrigued, then it's like, okay, you know what? Let me ask some more questions. So therefore it's like, yeah. So it's like, it's almost like cold calling on social media.
Okay.
So some people do it that way. But of course, as I said before, each organizer, they have their own processes. They have their own preferences. So it just depends. And I know it's like each TEDx event will also vary too. Like with me, sometimes it's like, okay, I might have like 20 people asking me over the course of a year, right? Course of a year. But some events are so big, they may have thousands of ideas.
Yes.
They can only select maybe a dozen. So it's almost like as competitive as USC PhD program. Or even worse than that in terms of competitiveness. Okay, I'm done with this question.
What motivated you to begin doing the TED Talks? I know you talked about how you started, but what was the motivating factor for you to start them to begin with?
So when I was about to finish up my level twos, I met up with an OTA named Terry Olivas de la O. So by the way, her daughter is also an OTA. I know she graduated recently from Stanford as well. So she was my mentor for only a couple of years. The reason why I said only was because, she passed away in early 2014 due to her health problems.
Oh,
but during those 2 years, she made a huge impact on me. And one of the things that she told me when she was alive was like, hey, Bill, I have noticed that you have a budding social media presence, you know, and it seems like you're growing to be a leader in OT. You're growing to be that. You're growing to be a clinician. But it's like, you know what? What I want from you is to learn how to toot OT's horn to the general public, toot about how well we do and the values that we bring in the OT profession to the public. So I'm in one of the experiences that I had. It was during the beginning when I started my OTD was she actually brought me up to a radio station for an interview.
Ah.
It was a radio interview and she arranged it for me to speak about, I think it's about autism, if I'm correct. So during that experience, she actually coached me about like how to speak about OT's distinct value to the public. So that lesson, number one, that lesson has stuck with me to this day. And then of course, secondly, when she passed away, a lot of people in OT, they felt that it was a very great loss. Yeah, actually, it's like, if you want to find out about her, I know she was mentioned in Karen Jacobs' Lego lecture in 2012.
Okay. I will definitely, anyway, we'll include her information in our show notes so that
we anyway, can, yeah, in the show notes, we can mention that.
Give her that credit and respect. Yeah.
But anyway, I must say that sort of like, I know one of the things that, so when I find my new mentor to replace Terry, one of the criteria I'm looking for is, yes, I want my new mentoring team to take me to my maximum professional potential.
Mm-hmm.
But another requirement is I want to honor Terry with what I do in terms of career decisions. So that was one of the criteria I picked with my new mentors. So fortunately, I picked three. And yeah, and they really agreed that I was like, hey, you know what? We like that. That is your vision. It's like,
mm-hmm.
you're a go-getter in terms of your professional development trajectory. But at the same time, it's like, hey, you are paying homage to Terry. And they knew that Terry was a very big advocate for the OT profession.
Yeah.
So she said, they said, it's like, hey, you know what? It's okay. Whatever ways you think that you can honor Terry will be behind you 100%. Even if it is not directly related to your professional development goals, per se, is like, will be behind you 100%.
Fantastic.
And then, yeah, so there's that part, right? And then I remember, let me fast forward to 2017 at the AOTA conference. At that time, people already heard the word that I just did my second TEDx talk as a speaker. And at that time, that also made some OT history, by the way, because of the fact that it's still today, that still is true, as of the recording, that no other OT student or practitioner has given more than one TEDx talk.
Mm-hmm.
That is true to today. So for the fact that I made history, so a lot of people want to ask me what my secret sauce was from getting one. Just like what you just asked now, right?
Yes!
So that was why I was, that was why. So I think, culminated that, I think it took me like 6 months to sort of thinking like, hey, maybe let me try to organize a TEDx. Because I think at that time I heard about like, at that time I think it was, given that I had already done two as a speaker, I think it's extremely unlikely that I got invited again. So the only way I can think of is, hey, why not give organizing a shot? So at that time was part of it is like, hey, you know what? Let me pay it forward from the two teams that invited me before.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a way it's like, if I can make it work, maybe I can feature OT as often as possible on that platform. You know, that was sort of my vision at the time, I believe, at the end of 2017. So that was sort of how we got started. I think we'll leave it to that question because I know you're going to ask me later about the stuff.
Okay. Well, we'll have to keep that part in suspense, but okay. So great. You brought us through your, basically your second one, right? Your second TED Talk, which was in 2017. And then the third one is the one that's
this just
recent. Okay. Cool. So we'll get to that a little bit later too. So here you are. You've been offered the opportunity to speak, right, on a topic. What was the topic of your second talk?
Good question. So the topic was the concept of aging in place and my reflection working at a SNF.
Ah. Okay.
I would say out of the three talks, I would say I like this one the least.
Ah.
Yeah. But actually, that also gave me a lot of insights in terms of me being an organizer leader. That really played a traumatic, I'm not traumatic kind of way, but it's more like a tremendous background in terms of, in terms of like, okay, now I know, like, hey, as a speaker, I had a good experience and then I had a very bad experience. Now I know a little bit about my coaching philosophy, right? Just like OT, finding your style. So, hey, you know what? It's like, in this case, it's almost like, okay, I was a patient with two different OT practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a very good treatment, but then I also got a very, very bad treatment.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's like, okay, now that I'm an OT, right? So I was like, okay, you know what? I got two treatments on drastic qualities that I can learn from, right?
That's a great analogy. And just to clarify for our listeners, that the third one is actually you producing the TED Talk.
But that's also
incorrect.
So let me just backtrack a little bit. Yeah. So that is also incorrect, because one of the golden rules of TEDx is that the organizer cannot speak at their own stage. So therefore, that is incorrect.
So you spoke. You're also categorized as a speaker on your third one.
I was a speaker on the third one.
What was your topic for that one?
I guess at that time, it is a topic about how people with different disabilities to go from self-acceptance to self-empowerment.
So do you get to pick the topic yourself, and how do you decide on what topic to discuss?
Good question. So I know I do this as an organizer, but then I also do this as a speaker too. Mm-hmm. So I would say I negotiate. I try to say to the organizer, right? If I'm the organizer, I will ask the speakers, like, hey, what are your expertise?
Mm-hmm.
So I would go from that first, right?
Okay.
And then second is like, okay. And then me as the organizer, I would respond like, okay, this is what I'm looking for. So by what I'm looking for is like, okay, one is, what type of event is it? So I provide the content like, hey, you know, for example, we talk about TEDx Countdown. I know it's a little bit later on. We talk about that, right? But let's say it's like, oh, one of the event types we're looking for is about climate change and sustainability. So if your topic is about, I'm going to go very far here. Let's say it's about women's rights or then it obviously doesn't fit.
Yes.
So therefore it's like, okay, it's almost like, so therefore it's like there's an association between, what the speaker's expertise and what the organizer's looking for.
Got it. In terms
of what to feature. Of course, sometimes it's also like, I know with me, when I organize these events, the topics are filled with first come, first serve basis.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's like, oh, sometimes the speaker may get lucky. It's like, okay, they get first dibs. So they get first topic they don't want to talk about. But sometimes it might be that they maybe end up with the third or fourth choice. Because I'm going to say, it's like, I might just say to the speaker, it's like, hey, I already had somebody spoken on your first choice. Or, oh, I already had somebody spoken on your second choice. Or, oh, what your first couple choices are, they already exist in the text. So therefore, it's like, it's almost like, yeah, so therefore, just come kind of back and forth between my expertise and negotiate what the organizer would want to feature.
Got it.
Yeah, it's a balance. It's a balance. It's not like a OT conference, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
It's a conference. And I'm trying to use an analogy here, right? So an OT conference is like, oh, you submit a proposal, you get accepted. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Versus like a TEDx, sometimes it's like, no. Sometimes it's like, you might be an expert, but sometimes it's just a timing issue that's like, oh, whoops, somebody already talked about it.
Yeah.
Some topic that already exists is like, I would love to have you, but I can't because of that reason.
Okay. And then in that case, right, and thanks for comparing it to like a conference, because I think that's what a lot of our listeners can relate to, right? Putting together a plan for a poster, putting together a plan for an actual, you know, presentation, whether it's a short one or a longer one. So in this case, they may accept you or not, right? Under those parameters. But, what are some other ways, I guess, that one can, I don't know, make their case or their presentations more attractive to the, you know, to the people, aside from just no one else has spoken about it yet, then, you know, we would love to hear from you, right? But what if all the topics that are under your wheelhouse are already covered? Will they give you opportunity to kind of go back and forth and consult and come up with a different topic together.
Sometimes I would do that. Sometimes I would do that together. But sometimes it's almost like literature review where you do OT, right? So it's almost like, well, you got to find what's out there. So the selling point is almost like, hey, you know what? It's like, yes, this topic may already exist. For example, maybe domestic violence, for example.
Yeah.
Like domestic violence, people might already talk about a million times.
Yeah.
But if we say it's like, hey, you know what? Maybe something like, I'm just throwing it out there, you know, just a disclaimer.
Yeah.
Let's just say it's like, so it's like, hey, you know, what does OT do in working with this population? And you sort of find out like, hey, you know what? Yes, this topic might be featured a million times, but the reason why my perspective would be a good topic for you, maybe it's because like, hey, I offer some fresh perspectives, or I offer some things that has not been offered. I guess it's like, I guess you have to define in terms of like, hey, it's like selling a product, right? You talk about, you have to make it in the show, right?
Yeah.
It's like, what makes my product unique?
Yeah.
My product unique is probably more an important question to answer.
Yes.
Because otherwise it's like, you know what? I think I made the students do a similar assignment before for OT school. Let's do it before. So one of the things I'm looking for is like, hey, why do I have to pick you over some other OTA or OT I can pick from the streets?
Yeah. Or someone else, for that matter, doesn't even have to be an OT, right?
Yeah, of course. You're just speaking to them, right? Yeah. So like, OT is like, hey, it's like, maybe even an organizer is like, hey, I know another OT. How come that person cannot talk about it? You know?
Yes.
Why you, right?
So I guess like just some very logistical questions. Like how long does it take to prepare? And I'm sure that varies from topic to topic, but you know, how long have you spent preparing for a talk, and how long are these talks?
Good question. So the second question actually is easier to answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, there are some talks that go over this, but I would say 18 minutes max, usually.
18, okay.
Yeah, 18. I think during COVID times with the virtual events, I think that there was a time when the virtual events were happening. I think some people tend to do it shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I mean, like, I think people in your podcast, or there's a term that's going around, Zoom fatigue. Right.
Yes.
So it's like, I think that was when the TEDx events were virtual. So it's like, I've heard that it's like, I know with a real talk, in like in-person talk, you talk about 10 minutes. That's a place. But I've heard that some organizers, when they did virtual, I think it was like, you know what? We want, I think 10 minutes is already too long. So, but of course, it's depending on the organizer, you know? Depending on the taste, it really depends. So there's that part. In terms of preparation, I'm gonna get that. So preparation, I think, depends. It depends. I would say sometimes I will only have 3 months to actually put together these kind of things together.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I might have a year. But that's also why another thing, I know we might go into tips later and just how to do something like this.
Yeah.
For me, it's like, you know what? If there is somebody that might not fit right now, but may seem very interesting later, I might just say, it's like, hey, you know what? I don't accept you right now, but I might consider you for later. So stay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like the acceptance letter for OT school, right? Or OT.
Like you're on the waiting
list. You're on a wait list. Yeah. It's like OT, on the OT community, they know that it's like, yeah, I have a very long wait list within OT because of the, also some rules that have to go by as an organizer as well. But yeah, I would say it's like sometimes out of 3 months, sometimes out of a year. So one thing, especially now I'm in a flow of doing these kind of things. So it's like, just keep on collecting contacts that is like, you know what? Even if I don't consider them now, I may consider them later. So yeah, that has helped me. So like, that has helped in terms of like, one is that people appreciate my honesty. Hey, you know what? That is what I can do at this time. That's how much bandwidth I have.
Yeah.
It's organizing, right? But then it also...
Then
it also like, hey, you know what? Is that there are some people that I do circle back and say, hey, you know what? Let's try this later.
I mean, you're onto something here. You talked about how, you know, to be invited to one and then a second one and then now a third, right? That sounds like it's pretty rare. So there, you know, you have an appeal, right? You have a certain approach that listeners are definitely connecting to, or listeners within that community are connecting to. And I love that we're getting to share this with the OT world, because, you know, as you're saying all of those things and what it took, you know, the topics and, you know, just examples of certain topics that people can talk about. I already had a couple of OTs in mind that I thought, like, you know what? I already feel like they're doing talks, right? They're just not in that platform, but there's definitely a lot of room for us to explore there.
Yeah, there's a lot of room, but there's also, like, you know, it's like the hard part, I guess, is like earlier I talked about being proactive versus reactive. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, well, if I'm the only one who's proactive, it'll take forever for me to sort of find these kind of people. Because I'm I will too. Just like in OT leadership, it's like, hey, you know, if I'm serving in any OTA positions, I am bound by some rules that I have to follow as a leader. Mm-hmm. As an organizer, I have to follow the same rules too.
So what are some hurdles? I guess I have a couple of questions, because, and you decide which one you want to answer first. I have one question that asks you, you know, some recent successes and recent challenges, right? Which is where the hurdles might come in. And I began to ask you that question because I started to think about funding, right? Is that a hurdle? Like how does one finance a TED Talk? How do you get paid to do a TED Talk? Can you talk to us about those money matters?
Yeah, the answer is like, no, you don't. You don't. As an organizer, you don't make money off an organization. So speakers, it depends, you know. If an event has deep pockets, then they would definitely have wider selection criteria. So I know earlier we talked about selection criteria before too. So some events, because they're small, so it's like, okay, they may just prefer people within driving distance.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to pay for the airfare and the hotels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some of the bigger events, they have deeper pockets, so they can afford discount days.
Yeah.
So probably give me that experience the first time. So it's like, so you get to come the day before, and then you are at the event, and you leave the day after. So you get the hotel, you get the airfare, you may get some thank you gifts.
Okay.
Thank you gifts, but no honorarium. There's no such thing like that.
Okay. So you're basically hotel and your airfare may be subsidized depending on the size of the company or the sponsors, right?
Yeah, or the event, just the event itself. Yeah.
Okay.
Or like my event right now, I'm doing everything virtual. So I just said, it's like, you know what? I'll be honest with the speakers up front. I said, I don't have money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have money, but I can try to be as resourceful as I can. So I also explained my organizing process to them too. You know,
yes.
I just say, it's like, hey, help me out here. You're like, so I gave them the guidelines on how to record on their own after. Mm-hmm. So that saved me money because like, yeah, that saved me money there because like, hey, I don't have to hire a professional crew to do, you know, it's like they can arrange something. They can arrange something on their own, you know, so that's something like that. So it's like, there's that part. Yeah. I mean, like, and then like, I've heard one of the guidelines from TED is that, the profits you make, it has to be reinvested for a future event. So by that guideline, sometimes like, I know typically for a first year event, if you're doing in person, you are allowed to have 100 paid attendees max.
Okay.
That's one of the licensing guidelines.
Okay.
Definitely is one of the hurdles too, because that was like, I was like, wow. And then I remember that you can only charge $100 per ticket maximum. So definitely that was a hurdle. So I'm trying to answer the hurdle question.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Tickets alone, they don't pay the bills. So we had to connect with a nonprofit organization to make the donations tax deductible. So that's one hurdle that we had to go through.
Okay.
And second hurdle is we need to get sponsors.
Yes.
Because, like, you know, like renting a physical venue is also expensive. And then, of course, planning the whole event. And that's before COVID, by the way. So we don't have any kind of post-COVID setup. We actually have to get food. We have to get audio-visual people. Yeah, that small event, I think, that cost me about 20, 30 grand.
Wow.
And it was a very small one. Because I also had to rent a venue, too. So that's why total is like 20, 30 grand. But I heard that is like a small potato to some of their events. I've heard that some events, they can cost over $1 million to operate.
Wow. So yeah. Are you able to make back that money based on the ticket prices?
Unfortunately, my first time I did not. And before COVID happened, I actually considered walking away. But I think that now I know we're talking about successes now. We transitioned
to that. Yay.
So we transitioned to that. So I was planning to walk away and then COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I made everything virtual. At that time, I was very skeptical too, because I did not know how a virtual event would operate.
Yeah.
No. So I was like, you know what? I came in, just like I said before, with speaking at TEDx, I was like, you know what? Let me approach this with an open mind. Let me do it like a qualitative researcher would do. Let me try to do content analysis on like what it would take and whether it's worth my while to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at that time, fortunately, I guess, it's like, I actually got invited to some, so I guess it's like, we got some exclusive perks for people who are TEDx organizers. So there are some events that they would invite TEDx organizers to attend for free.
Ah.
So I took advantage of it.
Okay, good.
I took advantage of it. I think I observed about a dozen events before I sort of made the pass to other experienced organizer friends that I know. I sort of asked them, it's like, hey, do you think it's viable for me to consider organizing a virtual event?
Mm-hmm.
And the response they told me was, Bill, it's not that you're not capable. It's just that you weren't smart. And I asked them, it's like, what do you mean you weren't? I wasn't smart. they said to me, it's like, oh, so you notice that your first year obviously is a very good learning experience because you were organizing a standard event. But look at your plan. You know, you did not have a backup plan. You did not have a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
If stuff falls through, right? So after you have done some of the homework, you have observed our events, like, what have you learned? I was like, oh yeah, a safety net is really important. So, by safety net, of course, it's like, so I guess in safety net, let me just backtrack a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. So, what's the safety net?
A safety net in that context is like, okay, so I was picking event formats that I can still run a program even if I don't have invited speakers.
Oh,
so I picked the event. So I was saying that I picked the event type that wasn't smart. So... And I was watching others' events. I was like, oh, so I can do it, keep it simple, stupid kind of way, eh? So that was when I sort of think about, sort of like over my head, like, wait, I have access to a ProZoom account because I teach. So essentially, it's like, hey, you know what? If I am not too greedy, I can make something happen. I can make something happen, you know? I just have to know a little bit more about what is the art of curating. So fortunately, some of them, they gave me some pointers. They're like, hey, Bill, for your first event back, don't try to have invited speakers. Just come up, just use the programs, just to try to refresh your skills in terms of putting together a program first, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you have speakers later, then do it later. So in 2020, I remember I talked to Stadbridge. And I told the school administration and say, hey, you know, would you mind if we do a super simple, budget-neutral TEDx event. But I think we have 6 weeks to do it.
Okay.
And fortunately, I guess it's like, at that time, I just guide everybody along. I just guided everybody along, and the event happened. And one thing I heard from school was like, wow, in 6 weeks, you were able to do something like this. Yes, it's not fancy by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that is a really good outcome for the school. So therefore, it's like, hey, you know what? It's like, we want you to continue to try this, you know? We want you to learn how to do it better. So therefore, I think that, and then I think just when at the beginning of 2021, I approached the school again, it's like, hey, you know, you guys want to sponsor the event? They said, no, you know what? At that time, I did not know about the expansion of the MSOT campus and stuff, you know? At that time, they just said to me, it's like, hey, you know what? We'll still spiritually support you. We'll support whatever decision you make. That's like, you know what? You can venture on your own, but we'll be behind you if you need something from us. As long as not too much, you know? Okay, you know what? That's fine. So I just said to them, it's like, okay, we'll do three little bit fancier events. So I just told them my blueprint. I said, okay, we're going to organize these three events. For each of these events, we're going to do three speakers each. I mean, that'll be fancy. We just want to use Zoom. So I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to be resourceful and let me see what I can get. And then, of course, after every event, after each video I produced got published to YouTube, I let the school know, I was like, hey, by the way, these talks got published. And they were like, damn, that's great. You don't want to read something like this. So okay. They actually trusted me to do something like this on top of teaching at the MSLT program. So like, yeah, wow. So I made a joke to Cambridge faculty is like, hey, you know, it's like, I'm like, you guys hired three people in 1 year, you know, like you guys hire an MSLT instructor. You guys hire somebody who knows how to do media. You guys also hire somebody who knows a little bit about knowledgeable about stuff around the OT world, you know?
Yes, they are super fortunate. And congratulations on all of that, you know?
Yeah, like, so I would say that's a win because, like, mm-hmm. I think that showcasing the videos I published to Stanbridge, to the administration, I think they know that, like, hey, you know what? It's like, we can put faith in Bill to do something like this, even though it's not, we don't have too much control over it, but the fact that it's like, he's doing it well without too much of our supervision. It's like, hey, you know what? Let's just let Bill continue to do what he does.
Yes. And, you know, having their support is wonderful, right? And I know we're talking about highs and it almost feels like, it almost sounds to me like just being able to produce these projects, right, in a sort of time efficient way, as efficiently as it can go, is success enough, right? Because you're putting out information, you're putting out you're speaking to an audience. So can you speak a little bit to that?
I'll say before that, I would say another high is like, actually I got to showcase some of the talks that I produced to my students. Two cohorts already for the leadership management class I'm teaching. I think the students' responses generally were, oh, like, oh my God, we never imagined we had somebody who knows how to produce these TEDx talks, you know, like, we watch a lot of these things on the internet, but we never ever imagined a faculty among us know how to produce these things.
Yeah, I don't know, just based on, you know, how you're schooling me about TED Talks and sort of what's involved, right? It almost seems like a logical step for any OT in academia. Like if you're already there teaching as faculty somewhere, it almost feels like it's an easy bridge because you're speaking about, you know, a subject matter that you're an expert in.
Yes and no. Of course, you get to speak whatever you're expert in. But if you are doing the nuts and bolts, sometimes, hey, you know what? You've got to work with the speaker's topics, what they're expert in. And sometimes that's what gets difficult.
So how do you handle that? Or how do you manage that challenge?
I think for me is like, one is like, okay, I know that my mentality at that time was like, hey, you know what? It comes with the territory. You know, I cannot have a home court advantage for all the topics.
Mm-hmm. Well, is that where our sort of skills, you know, I think as OTs were sort of designed and molded to be flexible, right? Or to meet sort of where people are at, meeting our clients where they're at. Is that where sort
right.
of that
yeah,
comes
that's what
in?
I do. It's like client-centered, you know, like, yeah. So it's like, imagine your speaker is the client, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, of course, as OT, one of the things that supposedly we also good at is knowledge translation.
Yes.
So therefore, it's like, okay, how do we help that client to deliver the message effectively? You
mm-hmm.
know, whether it's a topic that you know very well or is a topic that you know nothing about.
Yes.
I'll put it that way. Last year, for example, I know that's also goes in highest category. Last year, I produced a talk on neuroscience and climate change. In OT school, neuroscience was one of my worst enemies in OT school. I barely So I was like, and then it's like, I remember when a neuroscientist in LA area actually asked me, it's like, hey, Bill, I heard that you are organizing a TEDx talk. TEDx event, would you mind featuring me? After some negotiating, I was like, hey, you know what? It's like the event about climate change and sustainability. I don't have an OT. I don't have a scientist. So I was like, you know what? Let me just take a leap of faith and put that neuroscientist in there. I mean, she did a great job, by the way. She did a great job. But nonetheless, it's like, that was probably a very challenging topic for me to produce.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I showed that to my neuroscience teacher a few months later. So I think it was at AOTA or something. I still made a joke to her. It's like, I barely passed your class, but can you critique this?
Can you believe I'm doing a TED Talk on that topic?
Oh, can you believe I produced it? Can you believe I produced this?
Yes.
Crying out loud, right?
I mean, I'm sure our listeners can hear it through your voice, right? And the intonations of your voice. But
I do not speak at that talk. I do not speak.
Oh, no, I'm talking about how you're speaking now and how you're speaking about your experiences in doing these talks and producing them. There's a spark in you. It's obviously something that lights you up. It's obviously something that keeps inspiring you, right? Because it's not necessarily, you know, bringing any financial, rewards. But I think being able to put the word out there, being able to communicate to certain communities is also a really very important thing.
One more thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
I get the same feeling as if an OT practitioner get a successful discharge. Like, hey, with each talk that gets published, I get the same feeling. It's almost like, oh, the patient got discharged successfully, right?
Yes. Like goals met.
Yeah, that's like goals met. Everything went smoothly. I can move on now, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, you know, it's like helping people crossing an item off the bucket list. I think, you know what? The fact that I got to be part of their journey, I think that is awesome. I think it's like, just as others have people have done for me too.
Well, this might be a good time to segue into the question about myths. Are there any common myths or misconceptions that you'd like to demystify about doing this type of uncommon OT work?
Ooh, one is I think earlier we talked about like, right. So earlier, of course, I talked about like, well, if you're the licensee of the event, you cannot speak at the event. So I think that is
yeah.
one. And then earlier, we talked about fundraising. So
mm-hmm.
at the time, when I first took up a license, people thought like, oh, you have a lot of connections in OTA. You'd be just fine. But one of the rules from TED is that I'm not allowed to use crowdsourcing website like Kickstarter, or Indiegogo, that kind of site. So,
uh-huh.
yeah. So it's illegal to use that kind of site to collect money.
Oh.
Yeah.
So how do you collect money?
So that's why you have to approach sponsors, you know? It's like marketing the event, you do a lot of stuff.
Okay.
So that's a very big myth that I need to think is like, hey, I know a lot of people, you know? Maybe I can put a GoFundMe, whatever, together, you know? I was like, that's a big myth. I need to clarify.
Yes. What about a non-profit? Kind of setting up a non-profit.
You can set up a non-profit.
Yeah. You can't?
You can.
Okay. So you can set up a non-profit and
to sort of like get the people to donate to the event, right? To support the event.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, then, maybe.
I'm going to say, hey, I know a lot of people say this too. It's like, hey, can we have an all OT lineup or an all ally health lineup for that matter?
Mm-hmm.
Generally, the answer is nope. You're not.
Okay. Tell us why.
Because with TED, they have their own content diversity guidelines. So they have guidelines in terms of what they want each event to feature, you know?
Okay.
Topic wise, you can choose, no problem, you know? But then it's like, you don't want to be all health, you know? I remember the first time I ever applied for a license, I think I included a couple OT speakers, potential speakers were there on my application. Mm-hmm. And I got sent back. Just like the IRB is like, nope, we are not accepting
it. Great analogy.
And it says,
and oh, you're just like, why?
And it said, nope, the topics you choose were too narrow. We need you to go broader than that, you know? So what would be acceptable would be something like, okay, by an OT practitioner, but then you have a music artist and then an archaeologist.
Okay, so kind of diversity. But how, I guess, so how many speakers are there on, sorry, I couldn't spit that question out, but how many speakers are there generally in each talk?
Each event. It depends on
each event.
It depends on the length of the program. It depends. And it also depends on how the organizer is pointed, you know? I've seen as few as four.
Okay.
Three or four. But I also heard something like 20. So basically, as long as it's over a whole, within the span of a day, you can do it. So the length of time is up to you.
Got it. It sounds like the first one that you were involved in, that was like an all day event because you had to wait so long.
That was not nine. That was 10 to 4. And then we had lunch. So yeah. But then nowadays with COVID and you know what? I want to keep things simple. So I just do a morning. That's all I do. That's probably easy because I was like, I don't want to spend a whole day doing this because I'm thinking like, okay, that's a lot of content I need to produce.
Mm-hmm. And
one of the questions you may ask me like, what are some successes or what are some tips, right? So one of the things that I keep is boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Boundaries in terms of time commitment. Because my first event, I mean, yes, it flopped a lot in a lot of ways, but I also learned about keeping boundaries. Because I spent over 1,000 hours over this course of more than 12 months to actually get together. That is not acceptable. And then, of course, the money I spent is also not acceptable too. Like, that is also not acceptable for me to spend that much money without guaranteeing return. So I told myself,
I told myself
some boundaries. One boundary is, okay, whatever I spend, no more than $1,000 per year. I mean, I told myself, it's like, if I have to learn some skills to help me cut costs, I'll do it. That's the reason why I was like, you know what? I'm going to do all the video editing. Because like, hey, you know what? If I can cut the middleman out, that would help a lot financially, right? Okay. Or like the Zoom. It's like, hey, I already have a pro Zoom. Why do I need to get a better video conferencing platform?
Mm-hmm.
Or one-time use or a few-time use. I was like, that's not economical to me. I'm not going to do that, you know? And then I was like, I'm not going to hire a speech coach. It's like speech coach, they cost money for a professional to hire, you know? So it's like, no, you know what? I have speaking experiences. I think that I can coach through the speaker. I can be the topic that I am not too familiar with. It's like, you know what? I can get that person through the finish line. Yeah, so that's something that I told myself. And I told myself, no more than 100 to 150 hours.
Okay.
Here on this. That's another thing. I would say that's considered a win because so far this year I've been keeping my boundaries.
Good. Yeah. And that's key. You know, when it comes to these passion projects, trust me, I know. It's so hard to just keep yourself kind of contained. I mean, I'm also a chatty one. So even in you and I's my experience with you, you and I have already spent quite some time together producing this episode. But, you know, it's such a high, right? It's fun. I love talking to other OTs about their interesting type of work. But I love that you're sharing this with us. Thank you. You know, you're sharing with us your growing pains, right? Like what you've learned over the course of the time that you've been doing this, what works, what doesn't work.
Well, yeah, you have to do homework too, right? My willingness to do homework, because people have been saying to this, like, how do you do this? I said, well, you know, like, you know, during COVID, I attend probably more TEDx events during COVID than the number of OT conferences I've attended in my career. I think I attended 50, and people were like, what?
50? I think you hold the record, honestly. We're going to have to ask around about that.
No, in OT, I don't think any OT has attended that many TEDx events.
Don't think so either.
But then I was like, you know what? I think I told myself, it's like, okay, aside from enjoying being part of the audience, I told myself, I was like, let me just do like a lit review. Right. Let me try to analyze what I like about it.
Yeah. Like
about it, if applicable. And then, of course, another analogy I would use is like house flipping, like mm-hmm. flip this or flip this house, this kind of analogy.
Yes.
So that's sort of like, you know what? Let me try to think. It's like, okay, I have a tight timeline. So it's like, I know with flipping houses, it's like, you don't pick your favorite design when you're trying to sell a house. You're just trying to sort of match what the clients might want for the house.
Yes. So in this,
hey, you know what? I am the client. So it's almost like I sort of analyze like, okay, what components do I like? But then also, mm-hmm. what components do I like that I can pull off?
Yeah.
Yes.
And you're learning, right? I kind of felt like, you know, I don't know, I guess if we can relate it to OT school, it's like when you go to field work and you get to actually be on site and get to work alongside a supervisor, right? Where you get to learn from them and model and do, you know, basically demonstrate what you can do and get feedback from it, right? So all of those other TEDx talks that you observed, all of these other speakers, I'm sure you were a sponge there and kind of just learned a variety of styles, a variety of things that you saw may have worked, may have not worked, and, you know, maybe even had the opportunity to try some of those things.
Oh, yeah.
Events.
That's definitely true. So, like, I have one event that sometimes, like, my friend up north in California, he organized a very small group for his TEDx event since COVID. And then he did, as I mentioned, keep it simple, stupid kind of way. So his events were definitely in the keep it simple, stupid kind of variety.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, you know what? I see him as like, okay, that is something that from a game day operation standpoint, I like that style because I resonate that style. I can be that way. I have that.
Yes. Kind of,
so I was like, okay, I like that. But then I also think about like, okay, you know what? I like a little bit of a challenge. So that's why I told myself like, okay, I will curate some talks too on top mm-hmm. of it. Because of the fact that it's like, hey, you know what? That is what makes things fun. That is what makes things interesting for myself, you know? Plus, you know what? I like to use all the skills in my bag. Yeah. I think what I learned in doing this is that I really got to use not only my strengths, but any kind of skills that is like, you know what? I actually did not have this before I do this. But now it's like, you know what? I do. I do now. You know, it's like, sometimes I was like, I know when I was in OT school, like, I know people have talked about Canva, like, wait, what is Canva? I heard about Canva and I didn't really use it. But now oh, I have to use it because the interview for my TEDx talks that I produce, they use it. So I was like, okay, you know what? Let me know a thing or two about how Canva works, right?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I have a confession. I just learned about Canva during the pandemic. That's when I started learning and using Canva. And now I actually love it. And I'm grateful for the pandemic for introducing me to Canva, yeah. Because I love all the little things that I'm doing. But I guess this might be a good way to also segue to that other question about advice, right? I know you had some things saved for that question, but do you have any career advice for any of our listeners on how do they get started on this path? What can they do to follow along your path?
I guess I think I mentioned this earlier too. Is like one, I think is like, you almost have to approach it like research. I think this is the kind of thing that you really, really have to come in prepared. Because yes. Like, once the responsibility is on you, then it's like, yeah, like however much time that you have to run the event, it will fly by super fast. Sometimes it's like 12 months, I was like, oh my God, think of an eye, the event is almost here, you know? Yeah. So, and then like, of course, as you've seen on social media, I'm organizing multiple events in a year. So for me, it's like, I have to multitask.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, okay, you know what? I cannot be like, okay, one event done, next event. It doesn't work that way for me. It doesn't work out. So it's almost like I have to sort of like, I guess it's like scaffolding. So they're scaffolding my planning. So it's like, okay, work a little bit here, work a little bit there, that kind of thing. So I think that is another thing. And then I think three is, I think with TEDx, one thing I've learned is because typically people's expectations are very high, where there's, you know, especially because like when you announce that you're doing this, whether it's your school or your community. So, I mean, like, you got to figure out, like, okay, what's the minimum quality I can accept for my events? Okay, let's say you build a team, but then you have a flaky team, you know? Can you still put together an event?
Okay. Going back to your backup plan earlier, right, that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Because but I think as OTs, aren't we also well-suited? I mean, you know, you tell me, like, master adapters, right? Like, master modifiers when it comes to situations and environments. So when you've been faced with those things, have your OT skills come into play?
I would say, actually, right now, for this event that I'm doing coming up as of this recording, I think that I dealt with a speaker who actually just fell through. Like, we talked about for months, and then all of a sudden she realized, like, oh crap, your event is getting close, you know? I may have to cancel, you know? Because of the fact that it's both our fault for not communicating. So we realized that, like, hey, you know what? Let's just, like, I think the way that I communicated was, like, hey, I said, next year I might still consider you, but no guarantee. No guarantee, because, like, these kind of things are, like, sometimes when the opportunity is gone, it's gone, you know?
That's yes.
So I was like, you know what? I'll be a nice guy. It's like, hey, you know what? I think when I approach this way, it's like, I think she knows that. It's like, hey, you know what? I am not obligated to circle back. I'm not obligated, you know? I'm not obligated to, but the fact that I can consider to circle back, that is already like, hey, that is more than enough, you know? So I think another way is customer service. You gotta know when to be firm.
Yes.
Be nice, I guess. Yeah.
Going back to the boundary stuff from earlier too. Yeah.
And then of course earlier we talked about code direct messaging you on social media. That is, I would say that is also pretty hard too. That's something also pretty hard to deal with because like, you know what? It's like you have complete strangers approaching you. It's like, hey, that is hard.
That's how I met you. I want to share that with our listeners. That's how I met you. I cold direct messaged you on LinkedIn.
Yeah, but it's like, right? Cold direct message from people from other industries I don't know. The only thing
yes.
hey, you organize this event. It's like, would you like, would you want to, I mean, like, will you give me a chance to speak on your stage, right? That, dealing with that kind of stuff. That's why when people ask me, it's like, hey, can I shadow you? I was like, well, you shadow, you don't have to deal with this. You don't want to deal with this stuff, you know? You don't have to deal with this stuff. It's like, you only deal with the stuff when you're in the driver's seat. Sometimes I'm like, let's see, what else do I think of? Yeah, I would say for me, it's like, definitely like OT practice, right? Like in OT practice, we talk about seeking mentorship. The middle way is like, hey, you know what? In that community, I would say it's like when you're stuck in something when you feel like you're running into trouble, or you have signs that you might be running into trouble, right? The questions. There are resources out there. It's almost always better that you ask the question rather than you try to figure out stuff on your own. Because sometimes it's like, okay, you try to figure stuff out on your own and you realize that you might have made a major mistake.
I tell students all the time, you know, asking questions becomes a skill, and you'll look at that as a skill later on. It's not something that, you know, just because you ask questions doesn't mean that we're frowning upon you because you have questions, right? In fact, questions are welcome. And, you know, questions kind of help you think things through and may actually take you to the next level.
Well, yeah, another advice I have too. It's like, you know, in OT school, we talk about like, hey, get along with your cohort mates, right? Around you. So like, let's say we're in LA, right? So it's like, hey, you know what? There could be some events that are nearby. Well, I think that is important. If you know that there are some events that are nearby, it's like, hey, you know what? Just pop up at these events, you know, and then who knows, maybe get network. Can we talk about
network? Yes, networking.
Networking with the organizer or with some team members. Or sometimes it's like, you may think it's like, okay, you might know what? Maybe being in the driver's seat for the first time is too much. We don't want to do that feel good, because that is very bold of it. Or another way is like, hey, you know what? Networking, you may say is like, hey, you may reach out to a nearby organizer and say, hey, you know what? I want to be on part of your planning team. I want to know the nuts and bolts of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that is like, volunteer yourself. I know at Allison Stolper's speech earlier this morning, it's about volunteer. Yay, the Volunteer Real Estate Association. Well, yes. In that sense, it's like, in terms of TEDx events, it's like, hey, instead of just being a day off volunteer trying to be part of the nitty-gritty of these kind of things, so that you can understand the operations.
That's such great advice. I mean, really, networking, volunteering, multitasking, being, you know, prepared, right? And having kind of a backup plan, seeking mentorship if needed. Like, these are all such great advice.
And of course, another one too, right? I know I am not a very good example of this. Delegate, you know, it's like,
delegate.
People saying that, oh, what Bill's doing? Oh my God. How can he do it all by himself? You know, like, hey, you know what? If you are like hesitant to do it by yourself, get a few buddies to do it with you. Yeah.
Great,
right.
Share the
burden, right? It's not sharing. It's not sharing is caring. It's like sharing the burden, you know, to do it together, you know?
Yeah. And to also have some other folks to collaborate with. I don't think that that's ever a terrible thing.
That is actually not a terrible thing, you know? Yeah.
Thank you so much, Bill, for sharing with us all of the valuable advice. If any of our listeners were interested in following you, being in touch, is it okay if they do so?
Sure.
Perfect. And we will make sure to include in our show notes, like, your contact information and the resources and everything else that we talked about during the show. So thank you so much for joining us today, for spending the time, and for sharing with us your very interesting OT journey.
Okay, thank you.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.